Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me in the studios of CBS Interactive is my co-host, Fleischman Hillard's VP of Digital Media, Scott Rohde.
Hi, Tim.
And today's guest, the Communication Council's Anthony Friedman.
Good morning.
This week, we take a look at this year's best Super Bowl advertising, Ben Elton's Live from Planet Earth, Dead on Arrival, Should You Say Sorry in an Ad, Greg Hywood steps up at Fairfax, and Countdown to Circus. So first we turn to Anthony, CEO and founder of Ad Agency Host and chairman of the Communications Council. And I guess it's your Communications Council hat that you're wearing today. So Circus, firstly for people who don't know the Communications Council, this is what sort of superseded the Advertising Federation when that came together with Award.
Yeah, essentially the Communications Council was formally formed from the beginning of last year and was the coming together of three entities. They were the AFA, Award, and the APG, so the Account Planners Group. And then subsequent to that inception, it was also joined by the APMA, which is the Sales Promotion Industry Body. So it essentially is the aggregation of a variety of entities that were representing either different parts of agencies or agencies with a specific discipline, with the notion that bringing all of those organisations together would give us a more unified industry body and perhaps a stronger voice within the community and other positions of influence required.
And I guess this is one of the big first projects we've seen from it, really, which is Circus, which is a week-long series of events.
It's actually 3 days, really, at this point, although I think that as the event would progress over years, it might extend to grow to 4 days and perhaps ultimately even a week. But yes, it's the first project of scale from an event point of view that represents the membership and I suppose the interest areas of all of those different industry bodies that came together to form the Communications Council.
And which are the key elements within Circus?
It's a 3-day event that runs from the 23rd to the 25th of February at the Carriage Works in Everleigh. And each of the 3 days there is, I suppose, a kind of highlight event, the first of which is a series of keynote speakers. The second day is predominantly focused around Battle of the Big Thinking, something that the APG has previously
produced.
And this
is the second run for Battle of the Big Thinking.
Indeed it is, yeah. And the third day in the morning is something called Pencil Cases, which has run in the past from Award and is really a series of case studies that looks at campaigns that have won gold pencils at Award in previous years and listens to how those campaigns came together from the point of view of both the creative director and the client involved. And then obviously the culmination of the week of the 3 days is the awards on the Friday evening.
Okay, well, let's maybe start off with some of the keynote speakers then. Quite a sort of international feel to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the intention was to attract a group of speakers that were truly international and to try and bring them from a variety of different fields. So some that come from very forward-thinking advertising agencies like Wieden & Kennedy or BBH, others that come from really important global brands like Nike, and Google, and then also to incorporate people that are perhaps trend spotters or academics as well.
And you're thinking for the trend spotters, people like Jess Greenwood from Contagious, for instance.
Well, certainly Contagious is a kind of media organisation that is very focused on that. But in addition to that, there's also a guy called Josh Speer, who is a strategist and trend spotter. And from an academic perspective, there's Jeffrey Cole, who is from the Centre for the Digital Future at University of Southern California.
And you just announced him this week, didn't you?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, which of the presentations are you kind of sort of looking forward to from a personal point of view?
Look, I mean, obviously you're going to expect me to give you a diplomatic answer. I think they're all going to be interesting because they're going to cover different aspects. I think the other thing is that we've given people a pretty open brief. I mean, I suppose the strap line, as it were, for Circus is that it's a festival of commercial creativity. And so we've given people a pretty open remit around the topic that they want to talk about in relation to that. But certainly I know that Jose Cabaco from Nike is going to be talking about the design principles around some of the iconic stuff that they've produced as a company, both from a product perspective and also from a communications point of view.
And I should know the answer to this, but I don't. Is it this is daytime and into evening, or just evening?
Some of the things are daytime, and some go into the evening. I mean, really, the awards is a nighttime event. But
very much a nighttime event.
I think sometimes it does go into the morning, conversely to some of the others. But certainly day one is daytime in focus. Day two is predominantly daytime in focus.
Well, let's talk about that. So that's the APG's Battle of the Big Thinking, which I went to last year, and I just thought it was brilliant. Yeah. It was so good. So the format was sort of groups of three speakers around kind of five topics, and each does a short presentation. The audience votes their favourite of the three, and then there's a kind of vote at the end for effectively the biggest thinker of them all.
Absolutely, and the format is consistent with what you would have seen last year. I mean, I think we've perhaps been able to attract a broader reach of participant, but still I think the common denominator is that they're all big thinkers. It has a format a little bit like TED, where you've got short presentations with reasonably open briefs around what you discuss. But I guess the slightly different edge in the Battle of the Big Thinking is that you actually pit them against one another and give the audience the opportunity to talk about those that they found most compelling. But this year, again, we've got a great lineup. We've got Richard Sauerman, who was last year's big thinker, coming back to defend his position.
And I must admit, I thought he presented very, very well and did a very good job. For me, I actually wouldn't have voted him as the big thinker, because it was almost he won on the quality of being such a good presenter, I felt.
Well, I think that this is one of the things that's interesting. And look, I wouldn't comment on whether he was or wasn't of merit to win the ultimate title. But I think that certainly other people did talk about the importance of packaging as well as content, and how compelling you are in delivering your point of view as much as the coherence of the point of view itself. Ultimately, we don't determine the criteria around who progresses through the rounds. That's up to the audience. And I think that it wouldn't be the first time that great packaging perhaps prevailed over what could have otherwise been better content from other speakers. And I think that's something that is open to interpretation.
And the five areas are advertising and marketing, media, government, social, storytelling, and business. So, I mean, let's try and sort of pull out a few people. So you've mentioned Richard Sauerman. Who are the other kind of key people for you across that day?
Well, I think that there's a variety of different people. I certainly would imagine that many of the people there would be interested to know that the guy who is essentially the creator or co-creator of the Gruen transfer, John Casimir, is going to be there.
Yes, this will be interesting, because he's a journalist by background, isn't he?
Indeed, yeah.
He has some quite interesting views, and I know, sort of having talked to him once or twice in the past, it's quite interesting having a sort of outsider's perspective on the advertising industry. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, look, I think that he, you're correct. My understanding is that he was a journalist for many years and was at the Sydney Morning Herald for a long time. And for a number of years has worked closely with Andrew Denton's company in a variety of different areas, and I think was very, very involved in the talk show that they were successfully producing in the past. But he has certainly had an interest in the advertising industry for a number of years, and I think has become quite a prolific commentator on the industry. So in addition to the Gruen transfer as a TV broadcast, the book has also followed. And from my brief look at the book, it's actually very factual in content and slightly less satirical.
And there's a lot there as well. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't sit down and read it in half an hour like most sort of coffee table books.
So I think that he has become a reasonably convincing authority on the industry, and perhaps has a slightly different viewpoint by virtue of observing it from afar rather than being brought up within it.
And do you know what the sort of topic or heading is that he'll be talking to? Is that not settled yet?
Look, I think it's we have an inkling, but I think it would be more fun to just wait and see on the day.
Other interesting ones. Justin Baird, innovationist at Google Australia, which is one of those job titles that only the media and advertising world seems to have.
Well, I think that it's one of those job titles that certainly didn't exist a few years ago. If you asked me to define exactly what it is that he does, I think I'd probably have to gracefully bow out on that and say, look, I think that his role is probably one of those that is harder to define in conventional terms, and probably he's quite a creative role in a new and quite different organisation.
And another one that is kind of interest to me is Byron Sharp, who is based in South Australia, I think. But a couple of times people have talked about his work in comment threads on Mumbrella and always been very, very complimentary of the kind of sort of insights into the world of advertising and marketing he gives.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't want to sort of poke controversy, but
you're in the right place.
But your inference that him coming from South Australia almost suggests that you think that wouldn't be a place of origin where you might have an insightful point of view on the world of advertising.
No, Philip, it was me trying to dodge pronouncing the, and I'm not going to have to do it now, the Ehrenberg Bass Institute for Marketing Science in South Australia. So you'll have to tell me whether I got that right or not.
Well, look, I'm not an expert in the nomenclature of institutions around the country. But certainly, as you say, our perspective is that he has successfully made points of view that have elicited a response from places including Mumbrella, and so that more than qualifies him to come along and participate in the Battle of the Big Thinking.
And does anyone else in the Battle of the Big Thinking leap out at you, apart from the ones we've mentioned so far?
Oh, look, I think that there's a guy who is the CEO of One Laptop Per Child, which I think is a very different perspective in terms of coming with original thinking. I mean, that's an organisation that I think has a very worthwhile ambition. And perhaps is looking at, say, technology and social causes in a refreshing way. So you'd hope that he would also have some interesting thinking. I think the key thing really is to have people from quite diverse backgrounds who then perhaps tackle the topics in a way that is partly personal but also partly a reflection of the area of expertise or industry that they're in.
Now, less than 2 weeks out, anything kind of new, and this sort of, obviously, Battle of Big Thinking has happened before, but Circus is new. It's always a bit hard to get the industry, or probably any industry, to get behind something the first year. How are you doing on numbers?
Look, I think that we're very encouraged at this point, 2 weeks out, to see that ticket sales are very healthy, and we're confident that this is going to be a very well attended event. And obviously, anything in its first year, you're really trying to establish a positioning and a brand, and certainly subsequent years, all those hundreds of people that have been along and had a great experience will have told many people, and you'll expect a significant increase in uptake in subsequent years. But certainly for year one, ticket sales are very healthy. We're pretty much at target.
What is the target, roughly?
Well, it varies from event to event, but let's say certainly that there are many hundreds at most of the events and significantly more than that. At the awards, it's traditionally been, you know, upwards towards 1,000 people, and so the numbers are looking good. There is still room for a few more. If people want to pester their bosses or call up and make their bookings, and we would love to have as many people there as possible, because this is really an opportunity for us to kind of celebrate and reflect on what we all do as an industry. I think the other thing is that this is perhaps reminiscent of things that are done around the world, like Cannes, for example, or Spikes, for example. For many of us, we won't have the opportunity to get to the other side of the world or even up to Singapore or wherever it is for this sort of thing. And so this is an opportunity to perhaps experience some of that.
Ambition to become a sort of, in future years, almost an Australian Cannes or Spikes.
Well, look, I think it would be great to think that we end up producing an event that has content that allows us to span several days over a period of perhaps up to a week. And that's attracting people from our industry and from our client organisations from both Sydney, New South Wales and around Australia, and perhaps across to New Zealand up into Asia as well.
An award obviously is now part of the Communications Council. Has the format changed for this year at all, or will it be the Raucous Awards of previous years?
Look, the format is consistent. The format of the awards has changed from year to year over a number of years. What we're doing this year is not vastly different to some of the stuff that's been done in the past. I think the way that it has perhaps evolved is that Craig Davis, as the new chair and that committee, had took a look at the categories and decided that some categories perhaps weren't as relevant as they might have been in the past, and that certainly with the industry changing, there were new categories that needed to be added.
Now, there are a lot of categories as well, aren't there?
Look, I don't think that's something that's unique to the awards.
No, but I'm pretty sure that the year before last, I was the only person who left without an award.
And this year will happen this year.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, unfortunately, unless you've got something in that I'm unaware of, it may well be that you are again... one of the people that leaves empty-handed. But certainly you'll feel enriched, if not rewarded.
But I guess my point is, by the end of the night, everyone pretty much seems to be carrying around a piece of mess.
Well, maybe that's just the way of the world. I went to my daughter's school sports day just before Christmas, and everyone got a prize. So maybe that's just the world we live in today.
No, it's also worth mentioning there's a couple of sort of side events as well. There's a thing going on at the Australian Centre of Photography as well.
Yeah. So I think that's really an exhibition of photography, of great photography first and foremost, but imagery that has been created initially for use in advertising. So it's really an opportunity for us to create a number of things that kind of off schedule, if you like, that provide additional interest and perhaps entertainment for people that are in town or are interested and immersed in circus during those days.
So the ACP is on Oxford Street here in Sydney, and that actually...
In Paddington, yeah.
And the exhibition is on a little bit beyond as well, isn't it?
I think it's on until around the middle of March. I can't be precise on the dates, but
Linda, the PR for Commons Council sitting in the background, you probably know this.
March the 12th,
so you have until March the 12th for that one. So for people who are sort of wobbling on whether to go along or get involved, what's the thing to kind of get them over the line?
Oh, I think that I've already spruced it quite heavily. I think the key thing really is that there's a lot of different things to participate in. I would say to people that are running agencies, there's a great opportunity to buy a pass that runs for the full 3 days. It's $990. If you buy multiples, you end up with 6 for the price of 5 or 13 for the price of 10. And they're very transferable. So you might send some of the guys from your account service team along to the keynote speakers. Some of your planners might be very interested in Battle of the Big Thinking. Some of your creative guys to Pencil Case and the Award Awards. So you can transfer them from department to department. For those people that might want to see different aspects across the 3 days, I think there's a lot that will be covered. And if there's a particular area of interest, you can buy single tickets for essentially a day pass. The other thing is that, you know, the council really exists for its members in terms of agencies, but there's a lot of stuff there that I think would be really good for people to perhaps think about inviting their clients to as well. There should be stuff that's inspiring and that thought-provoking that if you do attend with clients, you might end up walking away with some interesting stuff to talk about in subsequent weeks.
And a client who maybe feels like taking a risk they wouldn't have taken before,
for instance. Well, perhaps, absolutely.
Well, next we talk about the Super Bowl. So the American Super Bowl halftime break is, well, the Super Bowl of advertising. And $3 million or so for a 30-second ad, then you're going to see some pretty good stuff. And this year there's been a pretty good turnout. We'll have a listen to one of them.
Welcome to 4G.
We just got a new version.
All aboard the 5G train!
How many bloody G's are there?
I'll take it from here.
Okay.
All right, we're going to lose Ozzy. Bring in the new one.
Okay. Ozzy's in the background.
What?
In the background.
The new buyback program. You buy it now, we buy it back when it's time to upgrade.
It's Bieber, 6G fever.
What's a 6G?
What's a Bieber?
I don't know, kind of looks like a girl.
So that clip was the one featuring Ozzy Osbourne and Justin Bieber. Were you a fan of that one, Scott?
I think it came across kind of two ways. I thought actually Justin Bieber was a bit funny in it.
Who would have thought?
I know, who'd have thunk it, yeah. However, I felt that Ozzy Osbourne has finally sold any ounce of anything he ever had left out there, just thrown out the window, to be honest. I was quite, I just went, oh, well, that's it. The other ads I liked, I actually liked the ad that makes ironic references to advertising. That was, I kind of liked that one.
Yes, there were a couple of those.
I think the Chevy one was good with it turns into a teacher at the end or whatever.
Obviously, yes, the ad was being constantly re-edited as it went.
Yeah.
The teacher became sort of went from blonde to brunette to redhead. And,
the one that I suppose, maybe it's because I'm an Apple man or something, but I just found the Motorola one kind of sad.
Well, this was a sort of, it was a nod back towards the original 1984 ad, but this time the drones were the people with their little white earbuds in.
There's more Android phones out there and more than there are Apples. You know, that's the thing I don't get, that... You know, the Android is in the majority, and that's an Android tablet, I think, they're running in their video, and I was just in their ad, and I was just like, well, you guys are still in the majority, so...
Well, Android featured in a couple. There was another one for one of the Sony handsets, which featured thumbs being stitched onto the Android robot, which was really quite... that was one of the more disturbing
Sony have a habit of doing a bit weird imagery. I remember they had the whole... They brought out a white or a black PlayStation Portable, and they had a whole thing, a big ad that was pulled down because it was racist.
Caused some offence on that sort of lines. Anthony, for you, what's sort of leapt out, what's been talked about that you've kind of picked up buzz around for Super Bowl?
Oh, I think that undisputably the People's Choice Award, if you like, seems to have been for Volkswagen, the Darth Vader ad. I mean, it's one of those ads that's clever and beautifully produced, but that has quite universal appeal, and I think anything with little kids involved generally has a pretty strong appeal to a broad audience.
I mean, I wondered actually with that one whether some of the fact that the buzz around it was one of the first to be produced and sort of uploaded online ahead of the Super Bowl. So there was almost like the buzz seemed to be 2 days ahead of everything else.
Look, I think that certainly a savvy social media seeding strategy that precedes its airing on the broadcast is probably a good idea. There's already some buzz and anticipation around it, and I think that people are then almost looking out for it when it actually comes to be broadcast during the event. But certainly it's the one that seems to have garnered most attention from my perspective. The other one that I have heard people talk about comes back to the celebrity theme that you talked about before, which is the stuff for Groupon, where there were three ads that I'm aware of, one that had Timothy Hutton, one that had Elizabeth Hurley, and the last that had Cuba Gooding Jr. Some of them have more obvious relevance to the topics than others, but they seem to me to be ads that have polarised people. Some people seem to be criticising them widely, others, I think, can see that there's actually something quite entertaining in it, perhaps a little bit irreverent.
And it was sort of, you know, it starts off with a pompous celebrity and then there's a kind of twist, was the sort of...
Yeah, I mean, look, the way that they work from my perspective is that they each individually introduce a celebrity-endorsed campaign moment around a cause like saving the whales or protecting the rainforests. And then... it progresses, so Elizabeth Hurley is talking about saving rainforests. She then says not all forest trimming is terrible. In fact, with Groupon, you can get bikini waxes for substantially less money than you might otherwise, which is kind of funny. I mean, look, it's a bit Benny Hill, but it wouldn't be the first ad campaign to fall foul of that.
I noticed on the podcast, on the website, you said... the CGI ads, you weren't that impressed by.
The Kia one, I was
disappointed. I liked the Kia one. I didn't like the Coca-Cola one.
Yeah, see, I liked neither of them, just for the same reason, that it felt like a lot of money had been spent and to make something that looked beautiful, but didn't necessarily
have a... You may find the Chevy advert cost a lot more.
A big idea, yeah. I must admit, though, I did feel a bit guilty about the Kia one because I hadn't realised at the time when I wrote that Animal Logic, Australian people were involved in creating that.
Yeah, actually, that was the one I liked.
So the one I picked to slag off did have an Australian involvement, unfortunately, which I didn't realise.
You get a little nasty email, did you?
No, I didn't actually. It was one of those more in sorrow than anger type emails that I had. But I'm not unfamiliar with those. And do you, for someone working in advertising in Australia, there isn't really an equivalent to the Super Bowl. What is it, first day of the Ashes? Is that the sort of...
Oh, I think grand final in our codes would probably be the closest thing. I mean, you're not talking about audience sizes that are in any way comparable or costs that would be in any way comparable, but certainly it would be one of those kind of iconic annual sporting events, just by virtue of the fact that they are the sort of landmark events that attract the biggest audiences and therefore command the highest premium for advertising placement. But yeah, they're not in any way on a comparable scale. I think also it's almost the global attention that some of these marquee American events have. You know, the same would be true of the Oscars or even the Golden Globes. They're talked about globally in the same way as perhaps another awards, industry awards, film awards show wouldn't be if it was emanating from Australia or even the UK. Like
similar to the World Cup, though, I suppose, because there's a lot of adverts created solely for the World Cup. Although the Qantas ad, the last World Cup, did drive me nuts after a while because it seemed to be showed every second.
But I suppose, but you look at the sort of the big sports brands, Nike or Adidas, for instance. Those ads, the big global ads, get shared an awful lot before the event.
Yeah, there's a lot of money spent on those, especially on getting the talent in to do it.
I mean, I see it as a slightly different thing, because if you take something like the World Cup, it's obviously a significant event that has a number of brands as key sponsors, mm-hmm. and so they're creating communications to try and leverage that sponsorship. Whereas Super Bowl is generally speaking, an ad that could run anywhere at any time, but just so happens to be using this landmark event at great cost in order to try and create maximum impact. It's almost the ultimate in kind of traditional broadcast advertising, where you're talking about a big splash across a huge audience and hoping that will then give you momentum to then follow through with other elements of your campaign.
Well, next, from big ratings to small ratings, Ben Elton falls flat. So the debut of comedian Ben Elton's Live from Planet Earth brought in an average of about 455,000 viewers for Nine on Wednesday night, which doesn't tell the whole story. The peak was 905,000, which was shortly after Top Gear finished. And that average fell down to 800 and kept on dropping until by the end it was only 296,000 in the final minutes, which suggests that a lot of viewers tuned in briefly and then tuned away. Scott, did you see it?
I did. I actually watched the whole thing because I knew you'd want to talk about it this week.
And what did you think?
I thought it was hit and miss at times. I grew up listening to Ben Elton when I was very young, and I always found him very funny.
He was the guy who wrote the first series of Blackadder. He wrote the Young Ones.
Yeah,
And also did a lot of stand-up comedy in the UK
as well.
Yeah, and
it's stand-up that I used to love to. I can still quote parts of his stand-up from when I was younger.
So he was of this sort of new wave of alternative comedy that kind of came through about the same time that sort of Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie came through. It was him. It was Robbie Coltrane.
Yep.
It was all of those sort of people. So a big heritage.
A very big heritage.
Since decided that he's moving to decided to move to Australia for sort of, you know.
Well, he's part of Australian,
but now based in WA. So lots of expectation around the show.
See, I think that was the thing. I think people were expecting some kind of, you know, sheer genius, when ultimately it's a kind of live sketch show, which, you know, it's going to be hit and miss.
It took an absolute hammering in our comment thread.
It did take an absolute hammering in the comment thread. And I saw that, you know, I don't know. There was bits. I thought the woman from the bank ad who played Barbara and interviewed Ruby Rose was superb.
Although possibly playing the same character.
Well, kind of, yeah. But I thought it was funny. I thought the Nigella stuff was quite funny. I think actually Ben's comments on the whole, you know, this country's obsessed with reality TV kitchen stuff was quite good. I thought that kitchen sketch was terrible.
Now, one thing I did wonder, though, was whether actually the thing to have done with a piece of comedy like that was actually let it develop somewhere off prime time, quietly, build up a bit of an audience, find its feet, and then, you know, then go bigger.
Oh, absolutely. I think they took a massive gamble, and it doesn't look like it's worked. Which is probably a shame, because any chance that Ben Elton had of now doing anything in Australia, he's probably died in his arse. But I, you know, there was... Yeah, there was bits of it that were good, there was bits that were terrible. The whole live soap opera with the soap stars was just atrocious and cringeworthy at times. I don't think they needed to hit the lowbrow all the time. I think, you know, they could have went for jokes that were a little bit more highbrow at times. But, you know, I thought Ben Elton's little bits in between were good. But that's my opinion.
Well, next, a word from Christina Keneally.
It's difficult to admit mistakes, especially when you're the Premier. But I understand the government was too focused on itself and not focused enough on you. It went off track, and I am sorry. When I became Premier, I was determined to renew my team and get us back on track, supporting families, our seniors, and protecting jobs. And we're starting to see the benefits. Our state has the strongest growth in employment in the country, with 138,000 jobs created in the last year. We can all be proud of our public schools, which have outstanding literacy and numeracy rates. And our police force is at a record strength of almost 16,000 officers. But I know that raising a family is still expensive, and it's not getting any easier. That's why I will introduce a new law, the Fairness for Families Act, to help ease the pressure on household budgets. I'm determined to protect jobs and support families.
So what we were listening to there was arguably a political first, a political body saying sorry while they're still in power. Publicly, Christina Keneally, the Premier of New South Wales, appeared in the ad to apologise for Labour's shortcomings, obviously, and the New South Wales election is a few weeks away. Scott, what do you think of it as a communication strategy?
I think it was the wrong thing to do. You know what? I think stop wasting taxpayers' money, spending money on making adverts.
Well,
you know?
that would have been a political ad, though. So that would have been, you know, Labour Party funds rather than taxpayers' money.
Well, there's more waste of money then. Do you know what? Why don't you stop apologising and start fixing things? That's what I say. Or why not just not screw up in the first place continually? Because let's be honest here, Labour and New South Wales have stuffed up so badly on so many occasions.
Yeah, let's get on this occasion though. I'm not disagreeing
with you. But she apologised in
the
advert.
Yes.
But then she turns it all around, and that's what annoyed me the most. It felt like a sorry, but then do you know what? Here's a part of political broadcast thrown at you.
Strategically though, you're the advertising agency, the comms agency for New South Wales Labour. What strategy would you advise them to adopt?
Don't work for them. no, that's not true. Look, if you're going to say sorry, then you do it right. You know, you send a letter to every one of your constituents, or, you know, do something heartfelt. Put together a little advert with her walking towards the camera.
The digital guy is saying send a letter.
Send a letter. It's more personal, you know. Because I figured they have a list of everybody's addresses. They don't have a list of everybody's email addresses. That's probably why I come up with that. It didn't feel heartfelt. You know, especially she's got to contend with at the moment. Anna Bligh, Queensland. You know, that's her equivalent, and she's got to contend with that. And she's come up with this little walk towards camera piece. That's not what I was suggested. It's actually not the time either. I think the timing's wrong, and I think the message was wrong.
Well, next we'll be talking about changes at Fairfax Media. So, Greg Hywood has stepped up to lead Fairfax Media. That followed the departure of Brian McCarthy. Hywood had relatively recently joined the board and then has been in the role since the end of last year as interim CEO. Scott, for me, one of the kind of pleasant things is, you know, wearing my journalist hat, it's nice to have a former journalist leading Australia's second biggest media organisation.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I suppose it gives it the potential that we might actually see a turnaround in some of the news quality, or maybe a little bit more investment in the news area. I think it'll be interesting to see in the next year to 18 months what the changes will be.
I think I may have asked you a few months back, if you were the CEO of Fairfax, what would you do? I can't remember what you answered, what would your advice to Greg Hywood be now?
Well, look, the position he's in is difficult because he has to balance revenue versus, you know, quality of news, you know, and he obviously, I think the first thing he should do, and the first thing I would do, is stop autoplay. I think you're a content provider and you want to provide content that people want, which means give them the person the option to either play an ad or play a video or not play a video.
So this is where you land on a page and the video just starts playing,
yes,
whether you ask it to or not.
It's where I hated MySpace, because I'd go to someone's MySpace page and their music would play. SMH is doing exactly the same thing. I land on a page and I have video playing at me.
Now, we did see a nice little execution, or I thought it was a nice little execution this week on the SMH homepage for Qantas, where a guy kind of stepped out of one ad, walked across the page and stepped into the other into the other side of the ad. Did you like it?
Hated it. Created a flash layer across the whole Sydney Morning Herald. So every morning I go to the Sydney Morning Herald and I look at the stories and I right-click on each of the stories I want to read and open them into new tabs. So that's how I get my news. I went on to SMH, I run a program called AdBlock. It was like AdBlocker. It stops Flash running on my page unless I click on the Flash to open it up.
See, to me, you've just lost the argument at that point.
Well, no, why?
Because
it's a newspaper online. I'm going onto that to read the newspaper.
Yes, but their business model relies on funding the provision to you of that news by also playing adverts. If you block the ads, then you are no use to them as a reader.
No, because I am still a person viewing pages, and those page views go towards what they class as given advertisers as these are the amount of people.
No, because they haven't served the ads, have they?
No, the ad still appears on the page. It just is in a flash block, so it's sitting there but covered. So it still plays. I just don't see it.
So you're a party to the defrauding of advertisers, is what you're saying?
That wouldn't be the first time. It's like, really? Because I could have sworn when you open a newspaper, how many of them ads do you flick by that nobody sees?
Well, you might do, but they're not. They don't have a post-it note stuck over them, blanking it out, do they? You know, the argument would be, well, okay, to advertisers, yes, people they may not realise immediately. But their advertising becomes less effective because people aren't seeing it. That makes the medium less useful. So that to advertisers, so therefore they advertise somewhere else. So if I was the SMH, I wouldn't care.
Well, in that
case, whining about it spoiled your flash blocking experience.
Other ads still run on the site. You know, non-flash ads I still see. It's just the flash ads.
Yeah.
And mainly, the reason I block flash adverts...
I can't believe that you, as a former journalist, are willing to free-ride.
I read on my iPad, flash doesn't work.
That's a different story again, though, isn't it?
Exactly. So yeah. I'm getting that. I mean,
but you use an ad blocker. To me... Yeah.
No, I don't use an ad blocker. I use a flash blocker.
Yes, which includes blocking ads.
Yes, but the reason I use a flash blocker is because I get fed up of things autoplaying. That's the reason I set it up, was because I don't want autoplay.
I think you're contributing to the death of journalism.
Oh, really? No, I don't think so.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you, as ever, to my co-host, Scott Rohde.
Thanks, Tim.
And to our guest, Anthony Friedman.
It's an absolute pleasure.
And also to CBS Interactive for use of their studio. Production was by Georgina Pearson. For these stories and more, head to mumbrella.com.au. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.